We welcome back to Shofar, Dr. Bruce Winston, his wife Christy, all the way from Regent University in the USA in Virginia, and also associate professor who's living in Cape Town, Karen Cerf. She's also with us this morning, and we welcome you. We're glad you're with us. And every year when we hear word from Cornei Becker or Dr. Winston that they're planning another trip, we say, please, may we be included in the travel itinerary, because we are every year so blessed by Dr. Winston's generosity and his wife and Karen. They come to bless. And Dr. Winston is an accomplished businessman himself, entrepreneur, and he's involved in academics, he's the dean of the School of Global Leadership and Entrepreneurship in Regent University, a school that is making name for itself. It's a young school, but it's really, really making inroads. And the graduates and the faculty from that school are publishing widely and widely acknowledged. So we expect lots in the future from that university. And Dr. Winston is instrumental in the setup of that of the School of Global Leadership. And it's like a business school, like we would call a business school here, that they're running. And he's also the program director of the PhD program, if that's correct. He's been, when he can, he travels the world as much as he can, much as his health and the finances of Regent allows them to do. And we so appreciate that you make the trouble to come all the way to a very, very hot Boland. It's the warmest time of the year that you can be here. But we so appreciate that you do that. And that you not come only to teach, but he comes to impart, and our hearts are open to what you have to share. Thank you.
Thank you.
And please, before you start, may before I forget again, to promote some of his resources in the foyer. And Karen, who is also associate professor of the university, is running a cluster, which means that you can actually study through Regent right here in Cape Town and get a US degree study online. But please chat to her in the foyer. She can tell you all the more about that. Thank you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be back with you. South Africa is like home for us. We've been coming here for the last 10, 11 years and have had a chance to watch the transformation that you've started, the changes that you've been making. Another reason that it's home, not only that we've had a chance to participate with you a little bit each year. So Christy and I are from the state of Alaska in the far northern part of the United States. And rather, the difference in temperature perhaps, but otherwise, very much like South Africa. Multiple people, multiple languages, multiple cultures, lots of natural resources. There is one difference. We have a bit fewer people. There's about 700,000 total. And it's the same land size as South Africa, so we stretch out a bit more. We have opportunities and we have challenges. The similarities continue in that our people in Alaska are very entrepreneurial, like yours. We look forward to achieving results and not suffering the consequences. We do that through transformation. South Africa has been involved in transformation for a very long time, it seems to many of you. For some of you, based on your age, almost all your life. But it's going to continue. The United States, we began a transformation back in 1776. We continued that transformation for some 75 years before we began to get traction and see real growth. And as we got traction, the pressures internally began to boil and explode, and we had a civil war. After that civil war, we started another phase of transformation. And in the 1960s, almost 100 years later, our society exploded once again. We are still settling from that last explosion, but we are still in transformation. South Africa, you've been transforming for the last some 16, 17 years. And for some of you that are older, you've been involved in that, and you may be getting tired. You may be wondering, how come it's not over? When will we be done? A very long time from now. You may not see the benefits yourself. Some of you that are like me, getting a bit old, bit gray in the hair. Some are losing hair. Don't worry about that. God only made a few perfect heads. The rest he covered with hair. So I got a little perfection started. I'd like to be done. I'd like to be able to sit back. I'd like to be able to enjoy the transformation that's occurred that I've watched. But that's not what God has called us to do. We serve not for ourselves, but for the next generation. Unfortunately, most of us tend to want to serve for the immediate present. I'm going to bring a message today for you that helps reframe a transformation for you from a scriptural perspective, and then give you four domains from which you have to make the transformation occur. South Africa has such an incredible opportunity for the future. From the first year that I was here back in 2000, I was convinced from what I saw, what I heard, what God made me sense, that South Africa is the hope for all of Africa. The values of the South Africans will be the grounding base for Christianity to spread at a rapid rate. And that while South Africa may not be the commercial business giant, that'll be China. The United States needs to know that its time is over for that. And India will be like China, but will focus on services while China focuses on manufacturing. And in South Africa, you need to know that the Chinese business is coming here. Already we see incredible investments here in South Africa and north. And if Africa does not understand the past, there will be a new colonial period. But the transformation can incorporate with the Chinese business and learn to grow and benefit from it. In the state of Alaska, we have similarities, lots of natural resources, as I said. We learned a long time ago how to get along with business. We offered to help the oil business get the oil out of the ground in the far north of the state down to the water terminus for shipping. But we agreed to do it for a price. And that price was a certain percentage of all the oil that was shipped. We would be paid for it. The oil companies complained they would never survive, but they've all done very well. And the state, as a result, no longer has income taxes, but rather pays a tax back to the people every year. Last year, every man, woman, and child in the state of Alaska received $1,800 just for being there. Now imagine in your families, father, mother, three children perhaps, five people. Remember, children count. Every age counts. Imagine what happens to your household if you received $1,800 U.S. for every man, woman, and child. What would it be like to live in a society where the government pays you to be here? What an interesting shift. South Africa can build business relationships with current businesses and with the Chinese business coming, but only if you understand collectively how to do it. And that's part of transformation. The base for the message today first comes from Romans 12:2, in which that verse says, do not be conformed, which means don't keep doing what you're doing. Because remember, transformation means to do something different, to become something different. So first you have to stop doing what you're doing. You have to stop being who you are. That doesn't mean it's wrong. It just means it's not what you want to be. And it says then to be transformed. And the word in the verse means metamorphosis, a slow, gradual change from which there is no return. The perfect example for this is the metamorphosis of a caterpillar to a butterfly. The butterfly never goes back to being the caterpillar. The metamorphosis is hard work and scary. I'm sure if the caterpillar had the same sense, mentality, comprehension, intelligence that we have, it might begin thinking twice about starting to build a cocoon. Fortunately, God created the caterpillar not to know what was going to happen, but to only know what needed to be done. And so the caterpillar works and works and works to build something from which it will never see the results, because as the butterfly, it is a new generation. South Africa has a rich new generation, and many of you, by looking around the room, are part of that new generation. Compared to my generation, you think differently. You act differently. You behave differently. You engage in social interactions differently. The problem in transformation is that those in power, typically the older generation, do not allow the younger generation to build the cocoon that needs to be built. So in metamorphosis, one must understand who is going to do the work and who's going to be the beneficiary. We had a conversation just last week in Pretoria with a group, and most of the folk were my age, and we were all talking about all of you young ones and complaining about you. You're disrespectful, shame on you. But you don't listen, shame on you. That you think you already know what to do, shame on you. And that you all need to change. I've heard the same conversation in the United States, and I remind the people in the United States, I was a little more polite last week, but in the U.S., I'm not so polite. I remind the folk that are my age that in the United States, in the 1960s, we were all of your ages. And we were the ones that took on social injustice and wanted to change society, and we were the ones that took over university buildings. And we're the ones that demanded change, and we demanded to be heard and to have a voice. Now today, we're the ones causing the problems. We complained back then about the politicians and how corrupt they were. We are now the ones in office. We were the ones back then that complained about the business people and how corrupt they were, and we are now the ones who are corrupt. And we were the ones that complained about how society treated everyone else, and now we control society. But our time is ending and yours is coming. The group that we were talking with last week, towards the end, I was sitting between a 25-year-old and a 60-year-old. 25-year-old was beginning to get involved in the organization. The 60-year-old was the head of the organization. We were talking about the group coming after the 25-year-old. The 25-year-old shook his head and said, "You know, I just don't understand that generation." And the 60-year-old, after listening to all of us talk and interacting with us, said, "You know, we need to go find some 15-year-olds and put them on the board, don't we? We need to hear from them." So it is in South Africa's transformation. You need to sit down with some of the 15-year-olds. Say, "What do you think you'd like to have?" They're smart. They'll tell you. But it may not be what you want to hear. Transformation is not about hearing what we want to hear, because the verse in Romans 12:2 says that through the renewing of your mind, hearing, understanding, teaching, you will know that you can prove the will of God, and that's what you're seeking to do in transformation. Not to just know the will of God, but to prove it, so that when the Chinese business people come here, they'll say, "You've got something we don't have. What is it?" You can say, "We know God." You want to know Him? The greatest mission field we know is going to be coming to Africa. And they're going to pay you to talk to them. They're going to pay you by sharing what they pull from the resources of this country. They're going to pay you in jobs. They're going to pay you in time. What a great opportunity. And why do we care about proving the will of God? The verse goes on to say, so that we know what's good. Most transformation that I hear about here in South Africa or in the United States, we've had our share of transformation efforts. Nobody really stops to say, "This is what's good," and we all agree on it. Usually whoever's in authority and majority stands up and says, "I'll tell you what's good, and then you will do it." We have that now in our Congress in the United States, where the group in power says, "We will all get along, and we will get along by the rest of you doing what we tell you to." Now, I'm not too concerned about that, because not too long ago, the other group was in power and did the same thing. And the more we squabble about what constitutes good, the less good we get done. And the more we fight about power and control, the more we seek to do what's good for us, and we do not seek to prove the will of God. I seriously doubt in the U.S. Congress today that anybody cares about what is the will of God. In South Africa, the young generation who's going to take over can start that. And it's exciting to come to South Africa and see the amount of involvement by the young people. We don't have as much in the United States. After you in South Africa are through transforming Africa, I hope you come visit us and help us transform at that point. Africa is the cradle of civilization. It's where God began everything. I think it's where God's going to begin it again. But we have to be careful how we do that. The reason we seek the will of God to prove it is so that not only do we understand what's good, but what's acceptable, what fits all of us. In a pluralistic society, we have to know what is acceptable that we all agree to. The United States, for a very long time, has had a very large ethnic minority and a very large ethnic majority. That's changing. We no longer really have two ethnicities. Based on immigration and birth rate, we now have a very fast-growing Hispanic Christian population. We also have a very fast-growing, by birth and by immigration, Muslim Mediterranean population. The rest of the United States makes up the other third in another 25 years. We will have three ethnic groups running the country. Regent University has already recognized that, and we're beginning to adapt what we do and how we do it to fit a Hispanic population. I wouldn't be surprised that in a short amount of time, everybody at Regent will at least be bilingual. At present, most everybody in the United States knows English, sort of. We don't know anything else. We've never had to. We were fortunate to be so powerful in business and in social activities and in military that we didn't have to do anything. Everybody else had to come to us. That's changing. Fortunately, in Spanish, I know enough that I can order milk and bread, so at least I won't starve. But by the time we do this, I'll be gone. My grandson's oldest is 6, is already bilingual. He will probably know another 3 languages, and he will be about equal to most of you. It's amazing to me in our South African student body that we have at Regent that English sometimes is a 3rd, 4th, or 5th language. That's part of being global. That's why you in South Africa have such a tremendous advantage. But you're going to have to decide amongst yourselves as a pluralistic country what constitutes acceptable. What are the things in common? How do you build a base for everyone to work together, at least in the areas of understanding how we prove the will of God? And in doing all this, when you move from good to acceptable, you can achieve perfection. And I've noticed that in the younger generation, they tend to understand perfection better than I do. I talk to some of our undergraduate students that I'm also teaching, and some of them are very young. In fact, I'm old enough to be some of them's grandfathers. And they seem to know what perfect is. It's usually the paper they send me when they say, "Dear Professor, attached is my perfect paper. Please mark it accordingly." And I hope and pray every time I get one that, in fact, it is the perfect paper, so that I might have joy in my work. Rarely, though, do we agree between the generations as to what is perfect. But through that process, through that interaction, through the conflict that results, we establish something that's acceptable between us. And maybe the student redoes the paper, or maybe the student's good enough to be acceptable, and the student says, "Okay, the next paper will be perfect." My 6-year-old grandson comes over to the house and builds something out of blocks, and I ask him, "Jonah, what are you doing?" "I'm building, Grandpa." "What are you building?" "I don't know yet. I'm not done." So it is in metamorphosis and transformation. We may not be able to describe perfection until we get there, but we know sort of what it looks like, and we all agree in that direction. And when my 6-year-old grandson is done, he stands up and he says, "Grandpa, it's perfect," and walks away. And the next generation, his 3-year-old brother runs over and breaks it down and goes, "Mine." And so it is in transformation with generations. We have to understand how to let go at the right time and transformation and let the next generation continue. For many years in our MBA program, I taught new business people how to begin well. Never thought of teaching them how to end well. Now my generation is struggling in many ways to end well, and the generation prior to ours is fighting to not end at all. And as I consult with people, I don't do as much consulting now as I used to, but what little I do, I work with leaders who have trouble letting go. We need to trust the next generation to step in and do better than we did. I talk to our undergraduate students, and they tell me everything my generation does wrong. Reminds me of the 1960s. We did the same thing. We were right then, they're right now. It's good to turn it over to the next, because then the next phase of transformation can occur. Now, I said there were four domains I was going to talk about, and I want to move into those domains. We're going to look at some material from Ezekiel 1 that's repeated then in Ezekiel 10, and then John repeats it in Revelation 4. Both Ezekiel and John refer to seeing a being, an angel perhaps, an entity, a being. And both Ezekiel and John describe this being as having four faces. And they agree on the four faces, although some of the terms are used in a little differently. We're going from the Hebrew to the Greek, so there's all kinds of combinations there. The first face that Ezekiel describes is the face of a lion. Now, we can find the lion described in Scripture, referencing strength, as we find in Judges and Job. Waiting for an opportunity, as we see in Psalms and Hosea. Confidence in the face of adversity, significant for South Africa in transformation. We find this in Proverbs and Amos. And we find the lion representing Jesus in Revelations. Lions have a sense of royalty, a lineage, power, strength. When a lion speaks, everybody listens. All of you have the face of a lion. All of you have a lineage. All of you have a history in South Africa and Africa. When I stand and speak before people in Virginia, I remind them of my lineage to Virginia. I said I was from Alaska, but I'm also from Virginia. My family settled in Virginia in the 1670s. My great-great-great-great-great-great uncle was a significant general in our Revolutionary War. My family fought in the Civil War that tore the country apart, although I think we fought on the wrong side, but we fought. My father fought in the World Wars and Korean conflict, and my sons have served in Afghanistan and in the Baltic. I have a lineage. I know that lineage. I have a lineage at Regent University. I've been there for 20-some years. I've watched presidents come and go, and professors come and go, and students come and go. We all have a connection to where we are. We should know and remember our history. We should speak boldly about what we understand the transformation to be. We need to roar what we believe to be the will of God so that others might hear it and agree with us and roar in unison. So that in the process, we prove the will of God. You find this metaphor carried forward throughout the book of Matthew, in which the focus for the Hebrew audience is to understand the lineage of Jesus, so that when Jesus roared, they might understand and appreciate. The roaring must be done with caution. Roaring just by itself can become annoying. The second face that Ezekiel talks about in the first chapter is that of a bull. In chapter 10, he uses a different word. He refers to a cherub. In the Hebrew, both of these words can be used to describe a young animal. John in Revelation 4 says that this is a calf, the face of a calf. The Greek also here can be used, young animal fit for service. Hence, we find in many of the English translations, it says that it's an ox. Now, the value of the ox is not in the roaring, but in the serving. The ox serves for the present and does what needs to be done with the understanding that the present will lead to the future. The ox does not plow the fields and then say, "We're done, that's all we had to do was plow." Rather, the ox plows with the understanding that there will be planting and growing, and there will then sometime be a harvest. And the ox knows that he or she may never participate in that harvest, but rather sacrificially serves the greater good. Because transformation doesn't occur just because we stand around and talk about it. In academia, I work with professors that love to sit around and talk. And they'll tell me everything that's wrong and everything they need to do and should be getting done for them and everything they want. And then they'll say, somebody needs to go do such and such. And I ask them, are you willing to serve? Nope, not me. I brought up the issue. I roared about it. That's all I have to do. Transformation includes service. Proverbs 31 talks about the wonderful wife, giant metaphor for wisdom. And in that wisdom, the wife says, after she brings in everything to the house that she needs, that she girded her loins and started working right alongside everybody else. In addition to our roaring, we also have to do the plowing like the ox. The continuation of the metaphor is that oxen rarely plow alone. They can, but they usually plow together. And if you look at how ox are yoked together, both ox must work in unison. Because if two ox don't work together, nothing gets done, and the master is left only with the opportunity to discipline the ox until they become obedient. Rather, in transformation, we do not pull separately, we pull together. Therefore, we must first agree on where we're going. The value in transformation is that we know that we work because God called us to work. And we do not just understand the will of God, we do the will of God. Most transformation, though, from a political viewpoint, does not include the level of service. South Africa has huge opportunities for service, to serve South Africa, to serve the world, to be the base upon which everything else occurs. That service will do you well. We find this message of service and this message of the ox in the Gospel of Mark. Mark wrote for the Roman audience who had no interest in lineage, only in action and results. You must, as part of transformation, measure results. Where are you? Where are you going? But you have to make sure that you measure the right things. There's a concept in leadership called single-loop learning, double-loop learning, and triple-loop learning. A guy named Chris Argus came up with this. And in single loop, we just take a look at what we do and figure out how can we do it better. We put chairs here. How do we arrange the chairs better? Do we stack them differently? What do? The end result is always chairs in the same place. Double loop learning says, why aren't we in chairs at all? Why not tables? Why do we have somebody on a stage? Why do we do this? Why don't we do something else? The questions that have to be asked as part of transformation, to know, why do we do this? Triple loop learning says, why are we who we are? Why aren't we something different? Do we want to be we? Or do we want to be something different? Changing the entire values. Metamorphosis requires that you understand the values. Transformation requires that you understand where you want to go, how you want to get there. The young folk are very good at asking the hard questions. I know that's true because I work with them in the undergraduate program, as I said, but I also watch my six-year-old grandson. Kid asks more questions than I can imagine. Constantly, why this, why that? What are you doing? Why are you doing it that way? Christy told me the story one time when she was driving and Jonah was in the back seat and Jonah was asking question after question. Christy leaned back and said, Jonah, why do you ask so many questions? He said, because I want to talk to you. One of the essences of metamorphosis and transformation is asking the questions so that we can all talk together. It's through the all talking together that we find out who we are. We agree if that's who we want to be, and then we figure out where we want to go and why we want to go there. In the academic world, we don't ask enough of those questions, yet our professors are constantly asking questions, but they never ask the hard questions. In academia, we measure based on how many hours you sit in a seat. A three-credit course in the United States is based upon you sitting in a chair for 47 hours. And we do that typically over 16 or 18 weeks. As long as you sat in the chair for 47 hours, we give you credits. Now, then we measure you by tests, we ask you questions, and then we determine what grade to attach to those credits. Can you imagine that? How many times do we go to work and the boss says, okay, are you ready for the day? Yep, I'm going to sit for 47 hours this week. When I'm done, sir, you can give me a test and I'll show you how good I did. We go out and solve problems. We go out and create opportunities. Those are not the easy things to measure. So it is in transformation. South Africa has to ask the hard questions. What are you going to do? How are you going to know you did it? What constitutes good? We have a lot of road work going on right now for the soccer event about to occur. Glad to see it. Been asking questions for the last 6 years. When are you guys going to do road work? You're adding cars at 1 million cars a year to the roads, but not changing anything. Now, because of the World Cup, you're changing. I hope you get another World Cup in 3 years. And then another one, because it seems to be the catalyst for getting things done. But metamorphosis is not about serving the World Cup. Metamorphosis is changing who you are to be what you want to be. And part of that requires sacrifice of money for roads and other things. South Africa has the opportunity. The next face that Ezekiel talks about and John confirms is that of the face of a man. Now, in the Hebrew, the word is Adam, which we translate as human. And John uses the word anthropos, from which we define human also. So we can say that in this face represents humanity or humaneness. Not only do we have to roar the will of God, not only do we have to do the work, but we have to do it in love. We have to do the right things for the right people at the right time, sense of agapao love. We have to know that while we are also plowing alongside somebody else, that maybe we need to give them a drink of water. Maybe we need to give them a hug. Maybe we need to tell them, thank you. We appreciate what you're doing. And not just a meaningless comment, but that really you mean it. The basis of metamorphosis, of transformation, should be love. Jesus was asked, what's the greatest commandment? And he said there were two. He said the first is to love God, and the second is to love your neighbor like you love yourself. In that second statement, he clarified what this face means. As we love ourselves, we must then in turn love others. It's a golden rule. Because roaring without love is unbridled authority and command control. It is devastating and damaging. To work without love can be self-serving or uncaring. But to work with love can bring joy and happiness. A guy named William Edwards Deming was a great writer in leadership and management. He started out as a statistician of all things. But he was effective helping the Japanese recover from World War II and to become one of the greatest economic powers we've seen. And he taught the Japanese that what people really want is joy in their work. He said, it's your job to figure out how to do that. Metamorphosis. How do we go from no joy to joy? Metamorphosis. Through double loop and triple loop learning. We can't go to joy if we have no joy by just doing the things we do differently. We have to have humaneness. There was a study done not too long ago called the GLOBE study. It looked at global leadership and organizational behavior affecting us, hence GLOBE. And one of the domains it looked for was humaneness. And some of the countries they interviewed and worked with, there were 62 total. Some were very high in humaneness. Some were very low. But they also asked questions to find out what people wanted. And in every country, the people said, we want more humaneness. People want to be loved. They want to be led. In fact, they want to be led so bad they'll follow bad leaders rather than follow no leaders at all. The Gospel of Luke helps us understand this face of man because the audience for Luke were the Greeks who sought to understand the whole person, body, mind, and soul. So as you roar the will of God, as you serve as the ox, you need to reach out and love somebody And that's an opportunity to help build unity. The last face that Ezekiel writes about and John confirms is that of an eagle. We find that the image of the eagle refers to nesting on high. You can find that in Job and Obadiah. To be renewed, find that in the Psalms. Flies towards the heavens, we find that in Proverbs. Is swift, we find that in Jeremiah. The eagle, like the Gospel of John, seeks to understand faraway territories. While the ox is plowing the field, the eagle can see what's over the hill. So it is in metamorphosis and transformation. You must see the future. South Africa has an advantage here in that the foresight movement, futures studies, is well known here. There are organizations and societies participating in that. You have an opportunity to not only see the future, but to recognize where we're probably going, and then decide if your preferred future exists. And if not, you either reshape the probable futures to fit, or you reshape yourself to fit. Like the caterpillar to the butterfly, the caterpillar, not knowingly, knows the future and creates a new body to fit the future, a flight. If, however, flight is not possible, then somewhere in that metamorphosis, something has to change. And in changing, you create a new future. That occurs because we spend time roaring with each other and working with each other and loving each other, that we begin to see where the future is for all of us together. I talked about education, measuring seat time. We ought to be measuring accomplishments. We ought to be asking for each degree program, what do you need to be able to do, and then finding out how to measure that. We measure K through 12 because we believe the children learn at a set rate. And so we take them from one grade to the next grade, and we believe everybody's together. There are different future approaches to education in which we treat everybody differently to find out where they're gifted and to find out how God wants them to learn and help them to learn appropriately. Some learn by hearing, some learn by doing, some learn by arguing and interacting. There are future changes in education, my field, that will help. No matter what industry you're in, what field you're in, what field you want to go in, we're going to be different. The research coming out says that we are now training students in K through 12 to be prepared for some 40 different jobs in their life. And most of those jobs don't even exist today. So we are now educating people to do jobs that we don't know what they are. Imagine that. The future of interaction is changing. It used to be you only interacted in church when you came and sat for 2 hours. You get 2 hours of credit today. After another 45, you can actually get a course credit if you want. But today you sit for 2 hours. And we believe that if you sit for 2 hours, you've had church, you've come closer to God, and you've learned something. We're finding the young kids are doing things differently. They're using things like Facebook and having strong interactions. They can see the future of interaction, and they do it with love. I'm on Facebook. I don't do anything, but I went on Facebook. I have friends. I have friends I don't even know. Every so often I get an email message. Dear Bruce, will you be my friend? Click here. I click. Poof, I have a friend. But what has happened to me is I go into Facebook from time to time and read what I thought were just silly little comments. I begin to get an insight into the person that I'm watching. And I know that Joe just had a good cup of coffee. Now, when I first read that, I thought, who cares? But I began to realize that Joe cares. I now know that Joe likes a good cup of coffee. And because the way he wrote it, I know he's relaxing somewhere. Mary writes, read a good book last night, and then states the title. Communication is such that all I have to do is click on the title, I can see the book. Talk about speed of information. If I think Mary has a good idea, I can see what she's reading so I can be more like Mary. In the process, we begin to discover not only ourselves, but other things. It's the future of communication. The young generation can see the future better than the old generation. It's just a fact of life. The old generation needs to do, as I mentioned about the grip in Pretoria, put some 15-year-olds in the board of directors and say, teach us what you see coming. Who will we be and how will we do it? We're looking in the business world at different ways of retail. Now online shopping has grown to almost equal brick and mortar. And the online shopping community is looking for ways in the United States where no matter what you want to purchase, click on it today and you'll have it tomorrow. We're seeing television change whereby we will lose the benefit of commercials because every TV show will be its own commercial. And if you see an actor who you particularly appreciate and you like the sport coat that he's wearing, all you have to do is click on the sport coat. Your TV is a computer. It already knows your size. It already knows your color preference, and it says, if you'd like to have this, click again. Click it again. It'll arrive tomorrow. Your credit card will be charged. Future of shopping is changing. Future of work is changing. The young generation doesn't particularly care where they are. They just care what they do. The younger generation seeks to have significance, doesn't care about success. So when they come to work, they may not come to work. They may work from somewhere else. I can't tell you how hard it was to convince the people in my organization that we can do that. And they're all pretty much my age, a couple younger. We started working anywhere, any place. I'm in South Africa and I'm working. The person who directly reports to me that does a lot of work for the organization has spent the last 6 weeks working in a state 200-300 miles away. Everything got done. But I can't tell you how hard it is to convince the other people in the university that we're actually there. Somebody comes over to our office and says, where's everybody at? And I go, I don't know. We said, well, aren't you in control? And I said, no, not really. I know that people want to be led without being led. I know we want to focus on the right things, which is the work we want to get done, and not measure if somebody's in the office for 8 hours a day. I have ways of measuring the work. And in focusing on work rather than seat time, like students, people begin to have joy in their work. I'd rather sit down here in the heat rather than be back in the cold right now. I have more joy in my work. The young folk have different ideas, and we need to listen to them. Only then can we have long-term transformation. The book of John follows this concept of the metaphor of the face of the eagle, because it seeks to explore beyond where the other three Gospels went. Keep in mind that we do not choose the face, we have all four faces. Keep in mind that we cannot focus on a face because we have all four faces. Each of us, collectively, individually, must roar for the will of God. We must work to accomplish the will of God. We have to love through humaneness in order to follow what God has willed to us. And we must see the future so that we know where we're going. When you do that, you will not only be ready for the Chinese, but they will embrace everything you're doing. You will have an opportunity to influence Africa. And in the process, you will then influence the rest of the world. I particularly want to see all of South Africa be successful and have significance, but because I think you're going to be the people who my grandsons will look at and say, I want to be like them. What do they got? How come they seem to have such a close will of God? I encourage you to work together and to transform into that butterfly that you may not fully understand, but to then spread your wings and do the will of God. Let me pray for you, please. Father, we ask that you be with South Africa, with the world, of course, but particularly today, I'm praying that you be with South Africa, to give strength to those who have been involved in the transformation thus far, to give a sense of purpose and focus to those who are going to join the continual transformation, to give a sense of peace to the older generation as it moves and passes on the control to the younger, and to give the younger a sense of thankfulness of what the older generation did. I ask, Lord, that you help everyone understand the faces, to know how and when to roar, to know how and when to work, to know how and when to love, and to know how and when to see into the future. And in that, Lord, we seek to understand your will, that we might do what is good, what is acceptable, and perfect. In the end, all those will look around and say, we see God through you. Thank you for your service. Lord, we ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.